The first case on our calendar is 04-594, Athens County Auditor versus Thomas Zeno. Mr. Engel.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Mark Engel, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant Lee and LaRue Properties, Inc. The issue involved in this appeal is whether or not property is the property in question is exempt from taxation pursuant to either Revised Code Section 5709.07A4 or Revised Code Section 3354.17. The Board of Tax Appeals determined that the exemption did not apply under either of these statutes, and we submit to the court that that decision is both unreasonable and unlawful, and it should be reversed. The facts underlying the appeal are quite simple and straightforward. In 1995, Hocking Technical College commissioned a facilities study that showed that there was a severe need for campus housing for students at the college. The college draws students from all 50 states and from several foreign countries, and there simply was not sufficient space in the small village of Nelsonville for those students. As a result, the college and Lee and LaRue Properties entered into discussions, which ultimately resulted in the construction of the two dormitories in question. Pursuant to the arrangement between the parties, Lee and LaRue agreed to construct and maintain the properties. However, the properties were in effect operated entirely by Hocking Technical College. The question presented, first of all, is whether or not the property is exempt under Revised Code Section 5709.07, Division A4. The Board of Tax Appeals ruled that it was not, finding that the property was not connected with Hocking Technical College. In making that determination, the Board of Tax Appeals determined that there must be some sort of legal interest in the property in order for property to be exempt under that statute. We submit that that analysis is wrong, and that the evidence and the case law indicates that the exemption should have been granted in this case. The exemption that's provided is an exemption that extends to public colleges and academies and all buildings connected with them, and all lands connected with public institutions of learning and not used with a view to profit. The key phrase here, as decided by the board, is what is meant by the phrase connected with. We submit that this court, yes.
What about the phrase with a view to profit? I mean, your clients obviously intended to make a profit, even though they haven't. What do we do with that phrase?
Your Honor, this court has decided in several cases which we've cited that that phrase not used with a view to profit only applies to the second clause, and that is the clause that relates to all lands connected with public institutions of learning. I believe in both the Cleveland State case and also in the case that it relied on, Schnebley versus Kenyon College, this court determined that the not used with a view to profit only dealt with the lands question and specifically did not apply to the question of buildings that were connected with the college or university. And the Board of Tax Appeals did not question that. That was
our decision?
Yes. In both the Cleveland State and the Schnebley versus Kenyon College cases, this court has restricted that not with the view to profit to the use of the lands, not the buildings connected with. The test of when buildings are connected with a public college or academy is whether or not the property is used with reasonable certainty in furtherance of carrying out the necessary objects and purposes of the college. Now, in the Cleveland State University case, the issue involved there was the leasing of classroom and office modules that were owned by a private third party but leased to the college. The question was, are those connected with the college? And in that case, this court set forth that test.
Here the college cannot enter a lease, can it? It cannot own the property, and it cannot even lease the property. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. But the exemption in question doesn't require that there be that kind of an ownership interest, and nor does this court's decision. There happened to be a lease in Cleveland State University, but that's not what the court found and hinged its decision to say that it's connected with. Rather, the court said we must look at how the property is being used, and it was being used to further the college's educational purposes.
Furthering educational purposes by providing dormitory space for here, in this case, dormitory space for students I guess your argument is that the college, it helps the college to say to students, prospective students, we can provide housing for you in Nelsonville, Ohio, which may not have a lot of other housing, I guess, available. Is that?
Your Honor, that's part of it. But the other part of it is looking at the programs that are conducted at the dormitory by the college, which are replete in the record, and also the testimony both from Mr. Harper and from Ms. Phillips, which indicated that it's well known, studies have shown, and it's taught in the various colleges and university programs, that where you have campus housing, where students live in a campus housing, the educational process is enhanced, the retention of students is increased.
What about a restaurant? Students don't care for the food that's provided by the college. The college even provides food. So the college says to someone, a private person, build a restaurant or open a restaurant close to the university because that will enable us to attract more students to this little town of Nelsonville. Is that connected with?
Your Honor, I think if the college were sufficiently involved in the operation of that restaurant, perhaps it could be. As I said, it's not simply because this provides housing for students that's desperately needed, but also because of the educational programming and the educational environment that's enhanced by this dormitory.
Were there actually programs in the dormitory? Education programs?
Yes. The evidence indicated that there were different kinds of seminars that could be held there, some perhaps of a social nature, some of a safety-type nature, but some of an educational nature as well, the idea being that all of these types of programs are necessary for a well-rounded education. As we've indicated, and as I mentioned a little bit earlier, it's been clearly shown that providing these types of environments does enhance the educational process. And therefore, we do believe that the college is, these buildings are connected with the college. There is a use by the college to enhance its programs.
Counsel, I noticed you said could have, these programs could have been presented. Was there evidence in the record that the programs actually were in fact used or presented in that location?
Yes, if I said could have, Your Honor, I'm sorry, I misspoke. If you look again, both at the testimony of Mr. Harper and Ms. Phillips, there's a great amount of detail, especially from Ms. Phillips, of the types of programs and the things that are done to try and enhance the educational process. It's also important to note the nature. The board said that there has to be a legal relationship between the two in order for there to be a connected with test met. That's simply not found in the decision, and it's clearly not found in the statute. Unlike the previous section of the statute, 570907A3, which requires both ownership and use, the division here does not have an ownership requirement. It simply says that the property must be connected with. And again, there's not been a requirement of ownership. It's not in the statute. It can't be added there. The sole test is it connected with the university? And it is. The board's requirement that there be a legal issue, we believe, is erroneous, a legal relationship. But secondly, we would also point out that there is a contractual arrangement with the college with respect to this property. Now, that contract provides a skeleton framework of the relationship between the two, and the voluminous testimony indicates in practice how those parties applied that contract.
Is this case then similar to the Kenyon College case?
The Kenyon College case back in the early 1900s?
Schnebly.
I don't know. To be honest, I'm drawing a blank on the case. Maybe the nerves a little bit here.
Relax.
But I think what's important to note is that in that case, again, the importance of that case was that the view to profit issue does not apply to buildings, and that's what's in question here. And that's what we cited that case for here. I think if you look at some of the other cases we've cited, the Cleveland State, the Denison University case, I think they give you an example of what sorts of activities are connected with a college or university and do qualify, and we believe we've met that test here in this case.
Counsel, one thing leads to another. It seems that you have a fairly strong argument on behalf of the exemption. But there are also each step of the way creates, I think our concern would be that we don't open up an area where private developers say, okay, you know, now we can, and I'm thinking of a major development underway here in Columbus, up at Ohio State University, where the neighborhood needed to be, have something done, and an outfit called Campus Partners, I'm not clear exactly whether the, who owns the legal title to all of that. Obviously, private enterprise is going to be in there in a big way. The university is also in there in a big way, renting substantial portions, owned by Campus Partners, probably funded by the university to get it going, but what in some respects would appear to be private for profit operation, but a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
Does it all come down to who, where legal title
Your Honor, I suggest, if I may, Your Honor, I suggest that under the statute, ownership isn't an issue. I mean, that's a decision the General Assembly made. I'm mindful of the concern you raise, and I think it's important to look at the facts in this particular case in response to that. First of all, the testimony is replete. This is a special purpose property. This is not a general rental property. Nobody is going to come and rent one of these rooms where you have to share a bathroom with the next room, with no kitchen facility, only a communal kitchen. So keep that in mind, if you will. Secondly, it's available only to students. It's a typical student dormitory. I've got three kids going through college. It's typical of the kinds of dorms they live in. Most people are not going to pick and choose to live there. In addition, it is the college that picks the students who are going to live there. It's the college that enters into the agreement with the students. It's the college that collects the rents and pursues students who don't pay the rents. There is no contractual arrangement at all between Lee and LaRue and the students. Lee and LaRue have ceded that control in operation to the college in this case. It has allowed these programs to occur there. And I think that's what makes this case different from the normal situation of a house or an apartment complex located near a campus that any private owner may have that happens to rent students. They don't have to accept the students. They'll do a credit check. They can kick the students out. Mr. Lee and Mr. LaRue have given up that authority, and I think that's why this case is different, and that's why the exemption should be granted in this case.
How close is this building to the campus?
Your Honor, the campus borders on the Hocking River. This building is directly across the Hocking River from the campus. The testimony indicates that there is a footbridge across the river so that it's adjacent. However, if you wish to travel by automobile, you have to go about a mile because the nearest auto bridge is a little bit further away.
I note you cite the PERC case, but the syllabus does specifically say buildings located on campus and connected therewith. So you're taking us one step further from the PERC case, are you not?
I think the PERC case maybe is a stronger case because of that, but if you look at the statute does not contain the requirement that it be on the campus.
They were talking about the buildings connected. That was the phrase that was being interpreted there, and this court specifically said when the buildings are on campus and then are used for purposes of academics, it doesn't matter if you have a lease or if the building is actually owned by the university, correct?
Your Honor, I'm not so sure that I would say it that strongly. Perhaps it's a different view of the opinion. I think what they focused on was the use of the property and whether it could qualify. The fact that it was on campus, I think, was a helping point.
Mr. Engel, what is your response? You, in your reply brief, it's there. I'd like to hear your strongest argument to the auditor's argument that the General Assembly has clearly expressly said, of course, that technical colleges may not construct or modify or whatever dining facilities and housing facilities. The university could not take a tax exemption because they're not allowed to construct such facilities. Yet we have a private person who is seeking the tax exemption, that there's some inconsistency there. What's your response to that?
Your Honor, first of all, why the General Assembly put that in there, I can conjecture, but I don't know. There's no history that indicates why they've done that. Clearly, there is a need for it. When you're bringing students from as far away as they are, they've got to have a place to live. They've probably got to have a place to eat. What that does is that would preclude Hocking Tech itself from owning those properties and from claiming the exemption under that statute. But we have a little bit different situation here. Clearly there's a need. We have a third party that has stepped forward at the request of the university to help them to meet that need. This third party has essentially ceded much of the control of this building. It's built it in a special way to meet the college's needs.
And but doesn't the fact that L&L make a profit out of this affect the result in this case?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, they haven't made a profit. They've lost money every year. And the main
reason... Well, still, but they are a business for profit. They're not a charitable organization.
That's true.
Unprofit.
But the lessor in the Cleveland State case was also a for-profit entity in making a profit. The landowner in the Bexley Village case was also a profit.
Those cases are distinguishable, aren't they, since the institution had a lease with them?
That is a factual difference, but I think if you read the case, legally it didn't make a difference. And that's not what the statute requires. The statute talks about use. It doesn't talk about ownership. And that's the critical difference here. Mr. Chief Justice, have I answered your question sufficiently?
I think so.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. Mr. Gorey.
I thank the court. You have read quite a bit about the various uses that the college is said to make of these apartments. And you've heard this morning a little bit about those uses. And I think the critical sentence in the BTA decision was that not a single claim with respect to those uses is borne out by the written agreement between the parties. I think it's absolutely critical and essential to base the exemption on the agreement between the parties, because the agreement fixes the right of Hocking Technical College to do whatever it is allowed to do. For instance, we heard in the record, there's a lot of claims that the college may informally be allowed to do this or to do that. That was 2 years ago. If you don't base the exemption on the rights of the college, we today have no clue how this property is being used. We don't know if the situation is the same. It wasn't making a profit 3 years ago, 4 years ago, but the property was new. It could be making a great profit today. We don't know that. But the point is that if the exemption is not based upon the rights of the college under the agreement, then we have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow.
What are their rights? Do they actually operate it?
The rights of Hocking Technical College under the agreement. Well, let me tell you what the rights aren't.
Well,
because they have.
Why don't you
no
tell
right
us? I mean, that's.
I apologize.
That's the universe.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what the rights are? It would seem that we would base the tax case on what the rights are rather than what they're not.
The BTA referred to the agreement as a leasing agent agreement. I call it a promotional agreement. Section 1 defines the only rights and obligations and duties of the agreements that the college has. Engagement of college, I'm reading from Section 1. The college hereby agrees to the extent permitted by law, 1, to promote and list the dormitory as available campus housing. Now, it's not campus housing, it's off campus, but to promote and list the dormitory as available campus housing in housing materials distributed to students. 2, cooperate with the owner by advising the students of the availability of the housing and of the owner's leasing requirements. not the college. College doesn't have any right to have any leasing requirements for the property. That's it.
Okay, who's operating the building?
The section 3A of the agreement says the owner shall have the sole responsibility for the maintenance and operation of the property. Section 2 says not a lease. This agreement is not a lease and shall create no interest in real property whatsoever. The residents of each of these units, two buildings, are rent-paying tenants of a private for-profit landlord.
Council, your opposing council has maintained that the for-profit language of the statute only refers to lands. I've tried to look that up in his brief. I can't really find it. The Shelby case is a 1909 case, so I can't
describe it. Yeah, I think if you look at Cleveland State, you will see a line, and I think it's dicta, to be honest with you, but a line that says that language only applies to lands. Now, if you look at the section, that is not grammatically correct. The section 5709 says public colleges, so forth and so on, comma, and all buildings connected therewith, comma, and all lands not used with view to profit. And all lands, the not used with view to profit is separated by a comma. And it clearly modifies, or was intended to modify, at least in terms of grammar, the buildings and the lands.
That interpretation doesn't make any logical sense to me, and I was just wondering about the
cases. It does not make any logical sense, and that was probably not the intent. Well, I'll tell you what the intent was, in my opinion. When it says buildings connected with a college, it meant buildings used by the college. And in that context, it's impossible to conceive of the buildings being used for a profit. So no one simply dreamed that a college would use a building for profit, so there's no point in, I mean.
Well, is it true that students living in the dormitories who fail to pay their housing bills are not allowed to register for classes at the college?
I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, the university has a provision that says that if you rent one of these units and you don't pay the rent, there is no requirement in the agreement that.
Okay, is it, well.
For instance, the landlord.
And is it true that decisions about the annual rent increases are made jointly between the college and the.
And L&L.
Yeah.
The testimony was that L&L allows the university to suggest whatever rents the university wants, and then L&L gives those consideration. The testimony of the individual from the university was, yes, of course, we understand that L&L has the right to fix the rent. It is, after all, private property. The college has no right to use and occupy the property under the agreement.
Is it true that the college makes the room assignments to individual students and oversees the move in and move out of students?
I believe that's correct.
Is it true the college sets the rules for the buildings, including the rules about smoking, alcohol use, pet, and quiet hours?
I do not recall that being in the testimony.
Page 173.
Okay. There is a lot of testimony about what L&L allows the college to do. My point is that appears to be an informal agreement between the college and L&L. The agreement, the written agreement between the parties, does not give the college the right to use or occupy the property. Does not give the college the right to control, operate, or maintain the property. Does not give the college the right to fix rents. Does not give the college the right to provide or prescribe any rules and regulations for the use of the property, none whatsoever. Under the agreement, the owner reserves the right to fix the rent. To rent to individuals who are not students. There is no requirement in the agreement that the individuals living in these units be students. In fact, the agreement says that the owner can rent to people who are not students. As we have indicated, I think, in our brief, this case is of some, I think, historical importance. This will be the first time that this court has ever granted a tax exemption to a piece of property connected with a public college or any other tax-exempt institution when the entity that's supposed to benefit from the exemption, the college, the charitable institution, has no obligation to pay the taxes. Hocking College does not pay the taxes, never agreed to pay the taxes, cannot pay the taxes. And so the exemption is simply the sole result of this exemption is simply to increase the bottom line of the for-profit owner. I mean, I'd love to have an exemption like this, and I'm sure the other landlords in Nelsonville would love to have it too. That's the sole result. L&L won't have to pay taxes on the property.
Is the question whether or not these halls are connected with the university, in your view?
Under 570907, the answer, yes. The exemption is based upon whether the property is connected with the school.
So that is really the determination that we're asked to make in this case. And
and the appellant's argument is connected with means used by.
Yes.
Our argument is connected means used by, with an obligation to pay the taxes on the property. If there is no obligation to pay the taxes on the property, it makes no sense whatsoever to give an exemption. The exemption is supposed to benefit the college, not a for-profit landlord. And we can't possibly see how the appellant can get around that issue. They tried, but it would simply make no sense to grant the exemption to this property when the college has no obligation to pay the taxes on the property. The exemption will not benefit any of the students, won't benefit the college. The college will still get its $16,000, which is paid by L&L for the leasing promotional agreements. It will benefit the bottom line of a for-profit landlord. And our opinion, the county auditor's position is, that's not what we have real property tax laws for. That's not why we give exemptions to property.
Are fraternities and sororities usually owned by the college, or are they usually privately owned by the fraternities?
If they're owned by the college, they are entitled to an exemption.
But if they're owned by the fraternity,
then so. I believe in one of the early Denison cases, the BTA said no exemption, and if I recall correctly, this court affirmed that.
Well, if we rule in favor of the appellant in this case, wouldn't that open up all of those institutions to claim a tax exemption?
Consequences are enormous, yes. The answer is yes. All you have to do now is walk into a state college or state university and say, look, I'll pay you $8,000 to act as my leasing agent, because the Supreme Court of Ohio has said once you sign the leasing agent agreement, once I give you my $8,000, I'll save 100% of my taxes. Great deal. It's an enormous and a horribly complicated issue or consequence, because we have no clue where it's going to end. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gorey. Mr. Engel, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. First of all, with respect to the question about use for profit, please look at page 20 of our merit brief, where we've got that discussion and put the cases there. Secondly, the contract provides the framework. We suggest, as this court has often done in tax cases, that you must look at the performance of the parties to fully determine what their rights and responsibilities are. We think when you do that, you'll find that, in fact, this property is used by the college.
Let me ask you a question. The General Assembly has used a word term that's not very precise. Connected with is a very general term. Should we not assume that, I mean, you can, if we use your test, that if it enhances sort of the quality of life of the student, that can include all sorts of private enterprise, it seems to me. Should we assume that the General Assembly, even using an imprecise term, meant to include only those uses of property that are in which the university has a direct sort of direct control, or where it's on their property, or whatever. That is, shouldn't we assume that?
Your Honor, I think that you can assume that, but I think you'll also find, if you look at the record, that those facts are present here. And that's why we said, you know, the contract is merely the framework. You can't list every single eventuality that might happen. Look at the performance of the parties. Obviously, they've engaged in this course of conduct by which they agree of what's with how it's being interpreted. And in this particular case, as we said, that control does lie with the college. The college controls who's here and what goes on here, and they do provide programs to further their educational goals.
But you in your brief, you indicated that the college manages the buildings, but the statute doesn't permit them to do that, does it? It says they may not operate. Maybe we're parsing words, manage, operate.
Your Honor, I think that that is what we're trying to do. I think there's no question here that there was a need for the college, and there had to be some way to meet it. The parties tried to do that in a manner that did not contravene the technical college statute. I don't think that the college or the owner should be punished in this case because they've tried to meet a need
for
the
university.
But the
college wouldn't be punished, would it? College has no interest in this except that they want L&L to be successful, I guess, but they're not. It's L&L that's getting the exemption if it's granted.
But, Your Honor, the benefit here is that this building, these buildings are available to the college to assist them in their educational missions. And that is what the public benefit is, and that is what the exemption seeks to encourage, regardless of who does it. And in this particular case, albeit a private entity, when they work with the college to try and meet the college's needs, they should be able to seek the exemption, which is available, which is based on use for the college's needs. I think that's really the critical issue here, is this is not just an everyday apartment complex. This is not a movie theater. It's not a shopping center. This is somebody who stepped forward, tried to meet a need for the college to make the community better and to make the college better. That's what they tried to do here. That's the public benefit. And that's not what fraternities and sororities do. And that's why, in this case, the exemption is warranted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.